Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we are going to read Article 7 of the NALC Constitution. Maybe we'll read Article 8 too, see how long this takes. Of course, as usual, you already know because you are from the future, and in the future, it's already been decided how much I read. All right, so let's get started. Article 7, Source and Distribution of Revenue. Section 1. The revenue of the National Association shall be derived from the following sources: granting charters to branches and state associations, the sale of such supplies as may be required for the branches, and by regulation of the Executive Council under authority of the National Association, the per capita tax charged for each member of the association in good standing, special assessments which may be levied, monies which may be derived from the publication of the postal record, and such profits as may accrue from the operation of the NALC building. No postmaster shall be provided with a complimentary subscription or be permitted to purchase a subscription to the postal record without the express consent of the NALC branch over which the postmaster has USPS jurisdiction. All right, so apparently we charge a fee for branches and state associations to get charters. Actually, right ahead, it's only a dollar. That's right in the next section. It's odd to me that we won't let postmasters subscribe to the postal record. Like, I kind of would want them to know, like, hey, man, you're on notice. But I guess, you know, if you're anti-management, you're anti-management all the way. All right, moving on. Part A. A charge of $1 shall be made for charters given to newly organized branches in cities or villages wherein there are less than 20 carriers employed. So in my spare time, I've been listening to an audiobook on contract law, and in many cases, contracts become much easier to enforce or to make valid when there is an exchange of compensation. What did they call it? Consideration is what they call it in the law. And so this charge of $1 makes it clear that both parties are fully involved in this contract. It's an act of, what do they call? It's hard to remember these legal terms. I've only heard them once. But it's like you do something that's an action to prove that you are taking part in this contract. And this charge of a dollar, you pay a dollar, and so that proves that yes, you want to be a branch. All right, moving on. B, a charge of $5 shall be made for charters given to newly organized branches in cities wherein there are 20 or more carriers employed. Now that's odd. Like, why would they bother upping the charge? As if a small branch can't afford more than a dollar or a big, like, the charge seems academic to me, but whatever. C, a charge of $1 shall be made for charters given to state associations. I can't help but think that this must go all the way back to like the 1800s when a dollar was a significant amount. Maybe my interpretation of making it more contractual is totally irrelevant. It beats me. Either way, at this point, the union has enough money that there's really not a reason to change this. Section 2A. There shall be a minimum dues structure, which shall consist of the following. Each member shall pay monthly dues equal to 2 hours base pay for NALC Grade 1 Step D letter carrier employed by the United States Postal Service. So that's how much your union dues are. 2 hours of Grade 1 Step D. That's what it was. After November 24th, 2018, each member shall pay monthly dues equal to 2 hours base pay for a NALC Step D letter carrier on Table 1 implemented on that date. So if you're a Table 2 carrier, you're getting Table 2 pay, but you're paying Table 1 dues. Isn't that something? One-third of such dues shall be allocated to the National Union and shall be designated the National Per Capita Tax. The remaining two-thirds of such dues shall be allocated to the member's branch and shall be designated minimum branch dues. And it's my understanding the way this works is all of the money goes to National, and then National sends back that two-thirds to each branch. B, Each member shall pay to the National Association the national per capita defined in paragraph A, payable semi-annually on January 1st and July 1st, provided that members whose dues are checked off pursuant to a collective bargaining agreement need not advance their semi-annual tax, but shall pay it by the method determined in the checkoff agreement. Usually this is just a certain amount of money that comes out of your check. A member who has retired from the Postal Service under the Civil Service Retirement Act or Federal Employees Retirement System shall pay to the National Association $7 per annum, payable semi-annually in advance or via dues checkoff as provided in Article 2, Section 1E. I guess that's all you have to pay if you're a retiree, $7 a year to stay in the union. What a bargain, especially for those who are going to conventions as paid delegates, man. But hey, you give your whole career to the NALC and you've earned certain benefits. C, no branch may have dues which are lower than the minimum branch dues defined in paragraph A. Branches may have dues which are higher than the minimum branch dues. I know where I work in Las Vegas, branch 2502 has dues that are higher than the minimum. Application of the foregoing provision shall not result in a reduction of the dues income of any branch in effect as of July 31st, 2000, and any increase in branch dues as of such date necessary to preserve such dues income shall be implemented automatically. This section shall become effective on January 1st, 2001. Section 3A. $1 per member per annum, deductible semi-annually, so 50 cents every 6 months, of all per capita tax shall be deposited in the building fund of the National Association of Letter Carriers. All right, so we have like 300,000, 400,000 paying members between active people and retirees. So that's, let's call it 400,000 per year to cover the building fund. I wonder if that's enough to cover the rent in that headquarters building. I don't know. B, 95 cents per member per annum, almost the same amount, I guess 47.5 cents deductible semi-annually, or on a pro rata monthly basis for those enrolled in the dues withholding program, of all per capita tax shall be held in reserve in the general funds of the association. Said reserve shall be known as the National Convention Fund, the purpose of which shall be to underwrite the costs of the biennial conventions of the National Association of Letter Carriers under the supervision and authority of the Executive Council of the National Association of Letter Carriers. So let's say that totals $600,000, maybe $700,000 over the course of 2 years. I just went to this convention in Boston, and I don't know if that's enough money to cover all of that. I mean, it was a huge space. There were thousands of carriers there, and I wouldn't think that would actually be enough to cover it. I wonder how that works. I mean, obviously the NALC has plenty of money, but if this is the fund that's supposed to cover the convention, I wouldn't think it's enough. See, 50 cents per member per annum, deductible semi-annually, up a quarter every 6 months, of all per capita tax shall be deposited in the NALC Legislative and Political Action Fund to be used as authorized and directed by the national president. So it's my understanding that we have to donate to the Letter Carrier Political Fund because our dues money can't be used toward political action, that there's some law that means that, you know, that makes it have to be separate. It's probably the Hatch Act. I don't know. But here we have 50 cents of each person per year goes into this political action fund. So I don't know. They must be allowed at least on some extent. I doubt that we would have something right in our national constitution that violates the law. So there must be some nuance there that I'm unaware of. If you're aware of it, if you know how that works, like how can we have this money that goes into the political fund, but we can't just use union money for political expenditure, like what's the difference? If you can explain it to me, please send me an email, classesofmail@gmail.com. D, 20 cents per annum, deductible semi-annually, so 10 cents, a thin dime every 6 months, of all per capita tax shall be held in reserve in the general funds of the association. Said reserves shall be known as the Public Relations Fund, the purpose of which shall be to underwrite, insofar as possible, the cost of improving the public image of the letter carrier. The Public Relations Fund shall be under the supervision and authority of the Executive Council for the National Association of Letter Carriers and a committee appointed by the President. All right, so let's figure out how much this is. 20 cents per member per year. Let's say we have 300, 400,000 members in total. 20 cents per member, that would be like $80,000. Yeah, that's not that much money for public relations. So there you go. That's our fund. E, the National Secretary Treasurer shall reimburse to each state association the amount of per capita tax that was collected in their behalf from branches under their jurisdiction by means of the dues checkoff and the national semi-annual per capita tax calls. F, $3 per member per annum, deductible semi-annually of all per capita tax, shall be deposited in a political education fund for the exclusive use of National Association of Letter Carriers state organizations involved in political education. Biennially, each state organization will be given an accounting of the political education funds collected from and spent in that state. So, again, how is this distinguished from the money that we put in the letter carrier political fund? Like, where does, what does a political education fund do that the LCPIF doesn't do, or vice versa? I don't know. It all seems like political education. Is that educating our members politically? Like, maybe this is where the money for the giveaways comes from for the political fund. Like right now, right here, I am drinking a Monster Energy drink out of this Letter Carrier Political Fund can cozy. Dude, it is a great can cozy. And then at the last convention, I got a tumbler. That is also a really good tumbler, and the shirts are really good. Maybe that's where this money comes from. I don't know. I'm sure it's all on the up and up. It's just, like, I wonder what these nuances are. Maybe one day I'll learn about that stuff. Section 4. Or you know what? I bet that a state association president, like maybe the guy who does the coffee with the coffee with letter carriers, or I'm sorry, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but the Colorado State Association of Letter Carriers. Maybe he knows what the differences are in all these funds. Section 4. Should the necessities of... Now I'm going to interrupt myself again. He has an agreement to Rick to come on this podcast, and I'm going to come on his podcast. It's just a matter of figuring out when we're going to do it. And at some point that will happen. And these are the kind of questions I'm going to ask him, because I know at the state association level, they do a lot of political activity. So it'll be interesting to get into what that money's used for, what we're doing, what the fruits are of that sort of expenditure. All right, section 4. Should the necessities of this association require an expenditure in excess of its income, the reason for such expenditure, together with the call for assessment to meet the same, shall be submitted to the branches for their approval or rejection. A majority of all votes cast is necessary to authorize the levying of an assessment. Given how much money our union has in the bank on the national level, it's hard to imagine an expenditure like this coming up at any point in the foreseeable future. But you never know. Section 5. Any branch or member at large neglecting to pay dues, per capita tax, or assessments within 30 days after the same are due shall be fined 10% of the amount due and shall stand suspended until such dues, per capita tax, or assessments and fines are paid. Provided, however, the National Secretary Treasurer may excuse the payment of fines by branches where the fine does not amount to more than $2. So, just to reiterate, this is for branches that did not pay their dues to national or members at large. I don't know how you'd be a member. Like, I guess if you're a member, you go from branch to branch. You're not affiliated with any singular branch. I don't know how that works. Section 6. Any branch remaining suspended for 6 months shall forfeit all right and title to its charter. Oh, dude, if that ever happens to the branch in, I think it's like Sioux Falls, Iowa, or Something like that. Anyway, they're branch number 69. I looked it up at the National Convention. Dude, if they ever don't pay their dues and their charter gets suspended, I'm jumping all over that charter. I want to be branch 69. All right, anyway. Any branch remaining suspended for 6 months shall forfeit all right and title to its charter, which shall be surrendered to the National Secretary Treasurer. Such branch can be reinstated only by the payment of all dues, per capita tax, and assessments in arrears at the time of suspension, together with the dues or per capita tax to the National Association of Letter Carriers for one term in advance. So there you go. If you didn't pay your dues as a branch, you got to pay it all back and then some, and then you got to pay ahead because now we don't trust you anymore. All right, that is the end of Article 7, and I'm definitely going to read Article 8 because it is super short. Charters. Section 1. The President shall have power, in connection with the Secretary-Treasurer, to issue charters during the recess of the National Association. That would be the time in between conventions. And to take such measures as may be necessary to institute branches. Charters for merged branches will be issued in accordance with the rules and regulations as specified in Article 2, Section 3 of this Constitution. Section 2. In any state where there are not less than three branches, a state association may be formed, and the President, in connection with the Secretary-Treasurer, shall have power to issue charters between conventions. I got to imagine that every single state has at least three branches. Section 3. The members in any state shall not have... The members in any state not having a state association may affiliate themselves with the state association of an adjoining state until such time as a state association is formed in their state. I wonder if there are any states out there that don't have a state association. I bet there are. There must still be a few hangers-on or not hangers-on, lollygaggers that haven't put together a state association. I know we have one here in Nevada. And I have no idea what they do. All right. When this occurs, the members affiliated with their adjoining state association will terminate their affiliation with the adjoining state association and affiliate with their own state association. So there you go. If you don't have a state association and your state finally gets their act together, now you have one and you're part of it instead. Moving on to Article 9, it's kind of long, but it's interesting to me. I want to read it, and so we're going to, because I'm the boss of this podcast. Article 9, Duties of Officers, and this is D-U-T-I-E-S, like their responsibilities. This has nothing to do with their bowel movements. Well, maybe it'll be in here somewhere, but I doubt it. And we begin with President. Section 1A. The President shall preside at all meetings of the National Association and enforce all laws thereof. They shall have the general superintendency of its affairs with power to grant dispensations when, in their judgment, the good of the Union may require it. They shall have the authority to assign national business agents and other representatives for the purpose of engaging in organizational activities, policing collective bargaining agreements, investigating and settling grievances, unfair labor practices and labor disputes and related activities, as the needs of the union from time to time may require. So with the national business agents, I think we learned in a previous chapter that they are elected, but the president apparently does have the power to appoint them, maybe if there's a vacancy or if a new one needs to be created or something like that. B, the postal record shall be published in Washington, D.C. under the guidance and financial control of the Executive Council. Matter for the public or for the postal record shall be mailed so as to reach the editor not later than the 10th of each month to be considered for publication in the next issue. Manuscripts shall be carefully written or typed on one side of a sheet only. Proper name shall be legibly written. Branch, district, state association, and retiree items shall not exceed 300 words, preferably less. All articles submitted by authorized scribes pertaining to branch, district, state association, or retiree items of interest will be published as written, unless such article is defamatory or unlawful. Auxiliary items shall not be more than 150 words. Branch and auxiliary articles submitted for publication in the postal record shall be submitted by the regularly selected correspondent or their alternate. So it looks like if you want to write an article for the postal record, you can, as long as you keep it under 300 words. So how about that? Maybe I'll do that one of these days. C. In fact, I'd almost guarantee that I will do that one of these days. C. The president shall fill all vacancies occasioned by death or otherwise with person duly qualified until the next election be held. Between meetings of the executive council, authorize the expenditure of all funds they deem necessary and appropriate to furthering the aims and purposes of this union, sign all orders on the secretary-treasurer drawn as provided by law, and sign all documents and papers that require their signature to properly authenticate them. D. The president shall, together with the secretary-treasurer, sign and file with the secretary of labor, on behalf of the National Association of Letter Carriers, the annual financial report required by public law. So the union has financial disclosures that we have to present. We learned about some of those in a class at the convention about managing finances. It's like the LM2 or I don't know. There's probably different ones that you have at the national level. But all that stuff is a matter of public record. So if you want to see the union finances, you can absolutely go look that up. And there are also websites that keep track of that stuff in like a clearinghouse to tell you like that our union has like $2 billion in the bank or something ludicrous like that. E, the president shall have the authority and responsibility for carrying out the collective bargaining duties of the union. Dude, maybe you should get on that. They may designate, you know, by the time this comes out, maybe we'll have a new national agreement. I heard a few weeks ago that we're only hours away. And I heard a few months before that that we're like days away. So it's got to be getting close. Maybe it'll be out by the time this is out. The last rumor I heard was that it'll be released on Labor Day. And I'm recording this before Labor Day. So let me just get back to reading. They may designate such members of the bargaining committee as they choose and take all steps they deem necessary and proper to enforce the rights of the union and its members under all collective bargaining agreements, including the determination of referral of all matters to arbitration, and they shall appoint a ballot committee pursuant to Article 16 hereof. F. The president shall exercise the powers defined in Article 18 entitled Trusteeship. G. At least 24 hours prior to each convention, the president shall appoint from the list of delegates in the hands of the secretary-treasurer separate committees on credentials and mileage and per diem, each to serve during the convention. They shall also appoint a sergeant-at-arms. They shall further appoint such additional committees for the duration of the convention as in their judgment are required to conduct the business to come before the convention. You know, I had dealing with the sergeant-at-arms at the last convention. I was sitting with my delegation. I was there as a guest because I didn't know I was going to go. I had other plans and I didn't register in time. So I went as a guest, sitting with my branch, and my local union president actually got up, and rather than talking to me, he went and found a sergeant at arms to come and remove me from sitting with my branch because I was a guest. The sergeant at arms says, "Hey, are you a guest?" I said, "Yes, I am." And he says, "Well, I got asked to have you move." And so I had to go sit in the guest section. And then I start looking through the rules. I was pretty sure I already knew the rules. And sure enough, there is no rule that says I can't sit with my branch. And so dealing with the sergeant at arms, I talked to him. We agreed, yeah, there is no rule. And I went back and sat with my branch. It was a chicken shit move from my local president. Because, like, if he wanted me to leave, he could always just talk to me. But he didn't. He went to the sergeant-at-arms, had the sergeant-at-arms do his dirty work, and then he wasn't even right on top of it. So, good times. Next, they shall further appoint such additional committees for the duration of the convention as in their judgment are required to conduct the business to come before the convention. H. The president is authorized to appoint regional administrative assistants in such established NALC regions in accordance with the needs of each respective NALC region. They shall establish and appoint full-time regional administrative assistants based on the request of the national business agents, who must document and support their need, and such other organizers, representatives, assistants, counsel, accountants, industrial engineers, and other professional administrative personnel as they may require to assist them in the operation of the union and to fix their compensation subject to the approval and ratification of the executive council. All right, so the regional administrative assistants are the ones who handle those step B grievances. And or maybe the dispute resolution team is something separate, but I don't think so. I think these are the same people. And given the backlog of cases that we have, it seems reasonable to appoint more people to this task. The union certainly has plenty of money to pay for it. And the more people we have fighting this fight, it seems like the better off we would be. I wonder if there's some compelling reason why the union at the national level doesn't do this. Moving on. The president may also employ an expert accountant or audit company to audit the books and records of the union or any of its subsidiaries at any time when, in their discretion, it may be deemed necessary. And said expert accountant or audit company shall give satisfactory bond as to the accuracy and correctness of the audit. Little I, as in like a one, like a Roman numeral one. No, we must have had G or H. We did have H before this. All right, so this is I. At the close of each convention, they shall make such appointments of standing and special committees as shall have been provided for and shall have power to fill all vacancies occurring therein during recess. They shall see that the names and branches of all committee appointments be published in the first issue of the postal record after being appointed. So, I don't think we had any committees created during the convention, but if there were, then we print what the names are of those people. J. The decisions upon all questions of law shall be promulgated. Their decisions upon all questions of law shall be promulgated by the Secretary-Treasurer and shall be final between conventions. They shall report all such decisions to the convention for approval or rejection. Such decisions, when approved or revised by the union, shall have the force and effect of general laws of the union. So, this is further evidence that the president has the power to rule on things, but that the assembled body at the convention is the final authority. K. The president shall submit at each convention a written report of all their official acts during their term of office, and they shall perform such other duties as the laws, rules, and usages of this union may require. A written report of all their official acts during their term of office. I wonder if this is in one of the booklets that was given to us at the convention. I actually have them sitting here. I'm going to take a look real quick. And through the power of the pause button, I have looked. And it the book that I kept is the book that had all the amendments and resolutions in it. There may have been another book that I didn't keep that had everything that the president did. I don't know. Let's assume that it actually was published, and that the union at the national level does a better job of abiding by its rules than my union does at the local level. We'll assume that that's the case. L. The president shall assign all national officers, including the officers of the MBA, the Mutual Benefit Association, and the Health Benefit Plan to branch affairs, district meetings, and state conventions when, in their judgment, the size and importance of the event warrants such assignments. They shall, by virtue of their office, be a delegate to the AFL-CIO convention, and they shall chair the executive council. And finally, M. For the faithful performance of the above duties, they shall receive the sum of $239,791.62 per annum, payable weekly. Dude, he gets weekly checks and we get biweekly? What's up with that? Effective August 12, 2022, provided that future salary adjustments will be made with the same percentage given top-grade letter carriers in their salary increases. All right, now hold on. I just saw, not too long ago, like a little while before the convention, maybe a month before the convention, that President Renfro got this substantial raise, and people said, oh, well, it was already, you know, approved, and this is normal raise, but it says here that he gets the same salary adjustments that I would get as a top-grade letter carrier. I didn't get no raise. I've been sitting here waiting for COLAs and raises all this time that the contract's being negotiated, and that dude just got a raise, even though M says that he's supposed to get raises when I get raises. I wonder how that works. They shall be entitled to the same sick and annual leave provisions of letter carriers, and they shall be scheduled for 3 weeks of annual leave each year. So scheduled for 3 weeks of annual leave that must be on top of the regular annual leave that they get for being a letter carrier, because it says and. So yeah, they're entitled to sick and annual leave and scheduled for 3 weeks of annual leave each year. So it must be on top of. Otherwise it would be, I don't know actually. Like, it seems unlikely that they only get 3 weeks vacation. Maybe they do. Maybe they only get 3 weeks vacation. I mean, it's an important job and you have to be there. If you're taking a month and a half off, then that is like dereliction of duty at that. Oh, unless you go to rehab, and then I guess we're okay with it. But that does, I don't know. I don't know if they get like, you know, their full time off plus 3 weeks. I don't know. All right, moving on. Executive Vice President. Section 2A. The Executive Vice President shall preside in the absence of the President and in case of death, resignation, disqualification, refusal, or neglect of the President to discharge the duties of their office. The Executive Vice President shall perform all duties incumbent upon the President until the next biennial election shall be held and their successor duly installed. So as I understand it, when Renfro was out in rehab, that Vice President Barner did in fact step in and perform the duties of the president, which the NALC Constitution calls for. B, the executive vice president shall make a complete report of their acts at each convention of the National Association of Letter Carriers. I didn't look through the book they gave us. It must have been in there, and I just wasn't looking at it. C, the executive vice president shall serve as director of organ. I'm going back to this. All right, this thing, the report of all their acts. So if that happened, like I know plenty of my listeners also went to the convention because people kept coming up and saying hi to me, which was amazing. That was so great. And it was awesome to see you guys there and to shake hands and say hello and put a face to a name and all that. So if you still have all the stuff that you got at the convention, do me a solid. Look through it and see if there's like a list of all the acts of the president and the executive vice president as called for in the Constitution. It must be in there. Otherwise, like, how do we, I don't know. What are the publishing standards for this? See, the executive vice president shall serve as director of organization, collective bargaining negotiations, labor relations, and legislation, and in such capacity shall oversee preparations for collective bargaining negotiations and participation therein, and guide and direct all activities of this union relating to legislation. They shall have primary operational responsibility for giving guidance and direction regarding interpretation of contracts, the processing of grievances, the institution and processing of court actions involving collective bargaining relationships, and the processing of unfair labor practice charges. They shall be in charge of administering, policing, and advising upon matters relating to collective bargaining relationships and the national bargaining agreements and local supplements thereto. They shall be in charge of organizational activities within the association, which include the enrolling of members and other related duties. They shall perform such other duties as shall be assigned to them by the president. D, for the faithful performance of the above duties, they shall receive the sum of $201,709.57 per annum, payable weekly, effective August 12, 2022, provided that future salary adjustments will be made with the same percentage given top grade letter carriers in their salary increases. Same question here. I didn't get a raise. Did Barner get a raise? Because I didn't get one. They shall be entitled to the same sick and annual leave provisions of letter carriers, and they shall be scheduled for 3 weeks of annual leave each year. And I have the same question here. Do they get, you know, whatever our top step for the time in annual leave is plus 3 weeks, or can they just only take 3 weeks off during the year? I don't know. Moving on, Vice President. These next sections get a lot shorter. Section 3, the Vice President shall assist the Executive Vice President in the performance of their duties. They shall exercise direct, immediate supervision over the national business agents and other representatives insofar as their duties relate to their duties. This needs to be fixed because you got two pronouns here as far as their duties relate to their duties. I assume it's as far as the national business agent duties relate to the vice president duties, but I don't know. It could be the other way around. I mean, I guess it kind of means the same either way, but this should be fixed. They shall perform such other duties as may be assigned to them by the president. They shall make a complete report of their acts at each convention. Oh, there's another report that I never saw. It must be there somewhere. For their services, they shall receive the sum of $195,751.15 per annum payable weekly, effective August 12, 2022, provided the future salary adjustments will be made with the same percentage given top grade letter carriers in their salary increases. They shall be entitled to the same sick and annual leave provisions of letter carriers, and they shall be scheduled for 3 weeks of annual leave each year. All right. I got a philosophical problem with this. I've now read that same thing three times, and I don't like that we get paid every 2 weeks and they get paid every week. If you have money in the bank, it kind of doesn't matter how often you get paid. But it's, for some people, it is a burden to wait for 2 weeks to get paid. You know, it's when you're living hand to mouth, when you're living paycheck to paycheck, you need that money every week. And to me, it smacks of double standard that the union officials pay themselves every week, but they settle for us to get paid every 2 weeks. Like, it should be the same, whatever it is. For them, they should fight for that for us. Or if we're only getting paid every 2 weeks, they should only get paid every 2 weeks. It's not like people making that much money, it's going to hurt them to get paid every 2 weeks. They got plenty of money. And likewise, if we're not getting raises, they shouldn't be getting raises. And that appears to be what is called for in the Constitution. So, you know, this, it smacks of self-dealing, of I make the rules and so I'm going to make them benefit me. And that's not the way the union should be, in my opinion. All right, moving on. And for that matter, if, you know, 5 weeks of vacation is good enough for the top letter carrier, that should be good enough for these people too. Should they get an additional 3 weeks on top of it? I don't know. I don't even know if that's the proper interpretation of that clause. All right, but that's it for the vice president. Now we move on to secretary treasurer. Section 4A, the secretary treasurer shall keep a correct record of the proceedings of this association. They shall affix the seal of this association to all official documents, prepare for publication a copy of the proceedings of this association after the close of each national convention or called meeting, and shall present on the first day of each national convention a complete statement of the condition of this association, including a statement of the membership. I do remember that happening at the national convention. B. The secretary treasurer shall compile and arrange for publication, subject to approval of the executive council, all amendments to the constitution and laws adopted by the national association. C. The secretary treasurer shall draw and attest all orders, which must be signed by the president, for money in the payment of bills that have been approved by the fiscal committee, all of which shall be paid by the secretary treasurer. D. The secretary treasurer shall conduct the correspondence of this association and shall have charge of all records. E. The secretary treasurer shall keep a true and correct account between this association and the branches. They shall close all entries in their books March 31st, prior to the opening of the national convention, and shall present to this association on the first day of each national convention a full and correct statement of the money received and dispersed during the two preceding fiscal years. Maybe that was on a slide or something. I don't know. There was a lot to take in. F. The secretary treasurer shall receive all monies due the national association, and such monies shall be deposited in the depositories designated by the executive council and approved by the president. Such deposits shall be made in the name of the National Association of Letter Carriers of the United States of America, and interest received thereon shall be paid to the Secretary Treasurer and credited to the General Fund of the Association. G. The Secretary Treasurer shall have their accounts correctly posted and ready for examination by the Executive Council whenever they may require. They shall present to this association on the first day of each convention a full and correct report of the condition of the Treasury. Let's assume that that happened. H, the Secretary-Treasurer shall, whenever called upon to do so by the President and the Executive Council, account for and deliver over to the National Association or to their successor in office all monies, books, papers, securities, and other property of said National Association that may have come into their possession. I, the Secretary-Treasurer shall make monthly reports to the President and Executive Council giving the receipts and expenditures of the funds of this association in detail as shown by the books in their office. J, the Secretary-Treasurer shall make reports giving the receipts and expenditures of the funds of this union in detail as shown by the books in their office to the membership semi-annually in the postal record issues for February and August of each year. K, the Secretary-Treasurer shall be bonded in a good and sufficient sum to be determined by the Executive Council, who shall have authority to increase or decrease this bond when, in their judgment, such action is necessary to cover the funds accumulated in the Treasury. So in the class about managing branch finances, we learned about bonding, and it's essentially like, hey, I'm going to put you in a position of trust with all the money in this branch, and you have the ability to steal it. So a bond is essentially insurance that if you do steal it, the insurance company will cover that loss while, you know, we send you to jail. L, the Secretary-Treasurer shall preserve for 1 year the credentials of the convention delegates and all minutes and other records of the convention pertaining to the election of officers. M, the Secretary-Treasurer shall, by virtue of their office, be delegate to the AFL-CIO convention. N, the Secretary-Treasurer shall assure that every officer, employee, and other representative of the National Association who handles funds or other property shall be bonded, therefore, to provide protection against loss by reason of acts of fraud or dishonesty on their part, directly or through connivance with others. There you go. There's that bond issue that it's essentially insurance against being up to no good. Such bond shall be in the amount required by public law and shall be determined at the beginning of each fiscal year. The expense of such bond shall be paid by the National Association. Oh, the Secretary-Treasurer shall perform such other duties as the laws require, and as the President may from time to time assign to them. For their services, they shall receive the sum of $195,751.15 per annum, payable weekly, effective August 12, 2022, provided that future salary adjustments will be made with the same percentage given to top-grade letter carriers in their salary increases. They shall be entitled to the same sick and annual leave provisions of the letter carriers, and they shall be scheduled for 3 weeks of annual leave each year. Same questions apply that I've had for each previous one. All right. Assistant Secretary-Treasurer. The Assistant Secretary-Treasurer shall serve as Secretary-Treasurer in the absence of the Secretary-Treasurer. They shall be under the direct supervision of the President and shall perform such duties as may be assigned for them from time to time by the President. They shall serve as Secretary of the Executive Council when it is in session. They shall be bonded in a good and sufficient sum to be determined by the Executive Council, which bond must be deposited with the Executive Council. For their services, they shall receive the sum of $195,751.15 per annum, payable weekly, effective August 12, 2022, provided that future salary adjustments will be made with the same percentage given top-grade letter carriers in their salary increases. They shall be entitled to the same sick and annual leave provisions of the letter carriers, and they shall be scheduled for 3 weeks of annual leave each year. I would like to point out that the Secretary-Treasurer and the Assistant Secretary-Treasurer get identical pay. Isn't that something? Director of City Delivery. This is Chris Jackson. Section 6. A. The Director of City Delivery shall serve under the direct supervision of the President. B, the Director of City Delivery shall be in charge of all organizational activities relating to the City Delivery Service, including but not limited to the preparation of materials for training programs. Now, it so happens that the training slides at the Carrier Academy, at least here in Las Vegas, are woefully, ridiculously out of date. They still have managed service points, MSPs, on the slides here. And we haven't had MSPs in like a very long time. And so, come on, man. Get with the program. Update that stuff. C, the director of city delivery shall be a member ex officio of the National Joint City Delivery Committee established by Article 41, Section 5 of the 1973 National Agreement between the National Association of Letter Carriers and the United States Postal Service. D, the director of city delivery shall make a complete report of their acts at each convention of the National Association of Letter Carriers. And maybe if I can get my hands on that report, I can see when those slides were last updated, because that's something that that should be getting done. E, the director of city delivery shall perform such other duties as may be assigned to them from time to time by the president. Let me go back for a sec, because regarding those slides, I've talked to other Carrier Academy instructors, and they seem to have the same problem, that the Carrier Academy is like sadly out of date. But it may be an issue that's more specific to here in Las Vegas. It could be that we have, you know, there may have been updates at some point that the local director of training, the guy who fired me, or, well, anyway, there may be updates that we just haven't gotten and they're out there. I don't know. All right, E, for their services, they shall receive the sum of $195,751.15 per annum, and all this same stuff is the same. This is the same money, incidentally, that the Secretary Treasurer gets. All right, and the same annual leave and all that. Moving on, Director of Safety and Health, Section 7. A, the Director of Safety and Health shall guide and direct the activities of the union relating to safety and health matters. They shall perform such other duties as may be assigned from time to time by the President. They shall make a complete report of their acts at each convention. B, for the faithful performance, they get paid the same as everybody else, $195,751.15, with the same provisions. National Business Agents. Section 8. There shall be 15 national business agents who shall devote full time to their duties. Subject to the ultimate direction of the president and the immediate direction of the executive vice president and the vice president in their respective spheres of authority, they shall perform duties related to organizing, contract administration and interpretation, and the processing of grievances and unfair labor practices. Their functions shall include, but not be limited to, assisting in organization campaigns, gathering evidence for legal proceedings, assisting in the preparation of grievances and arbitration hearings, assisting in the mediation and conciliation of labor disputes, advising members and local officers upon practice and procedure, assisting in all activities relating to legislation, conducting training and educational seminars, dude, we definitely need more of those, and all other functions relevant to their duties. In the performance of their duties, they may be assigned by the president in such numbers and to such functions and localities as they deem fit and necessary. They shall have such control and authority over other representatives as the president shall determine. They shall be members of the executive council. For their services, they shall receive $139,879.31, and all the rest is the same. All right, so they definitely make less, but still, pretty good chunk of change. Director of Retired Members. The Director of Retired Members shall be elected... Section 9A. The Director of Retired Members shall be elected by the members of the National Association of Letter Carriers who are in good standing with the association. B, the Director of Retired Members' duties shall be to coordinate all activities of the retired members, and they shall be the legislation advocate and the congressional liaison for the retired members of the National Association of Letter Carriers. They shall be the national organizer for the retired members of the National Association of Letter Carriers, shall be under the direct supervision of the president, and shall perform such other duties as may be assigned to them from time to time by the president. C, the salary of the Director of Retired Members shall be $195,751.15, blah, 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 all the same. So they're back up to that high salary. And I've always wondered, if you know this, please send it to me. If you're retired from the post office and then you take a job in the union, does this, like for the director of retired members, you have to be a retiree. So does this person get their $195,000 a year from our dues and then also get their postal pension on top of it? Because if they do, like maybe that makes them the highest paid person in the union. Because they get that second salary. I assume that's the case. I don't think that working for the union would have you forfeit your retirement benefit. So that's a pretty sweet deal. Board of Trustees, Section 10. The Board of Trustees shall act as trustees of this union. They shall no less frequently than annually audit the books of this union, employing such professional and clerical assistance as they deem necessary. They shall render a complete report of such audits to the Executive Council, which shall arrange for their publication in the postal record. They shall also make a complete report of such audits to the Convention. They shall hold in custody the property of the Union and approve the bonds of all bonded officers. They shall also serve as trustees of the NALC Health Benefit Program, Life Insurance Program, and the NALC Annuity Trust Fund, and such other duties as the National Convention may direct. The Board of Trustees shall select from their own number one who shall be a chairperson of the board. For the faithful performance of the above duties, each of the three trustees shall receive the sum of $35,987.65 per annum, payable weekly, effective August 12, 2022, with the selected chairperson of the board to receive an additional $700 per annum, payable weekly, provided that future salary adjustments will be made with the same percentage given top-grade letter carriers and their salary increases. All right, so this is obviously not a full-time position. This is something that you might be called to do. Well, it says no less frequently than annually, so at least once a year, you come in and what, for 2 weeks, you look through the books, and then you get paid $36,000. That's not bad. Next, Executive Council. I mean, I don't know. You know, maybe there's more to it than that. It beats me, but it does seem like a pretty good gig. Not bad for a part-time job. Executive Council, Section 11A. The Executive Council shall consist of the President, Executive Vice President, Secretary Treasurer, Assistant Secretary Treasurer, Director of City Delivery, Director of Safety and Health, Director of Life Insurance, Director of Health Benefit Plan, Director of Retired Members, Board of Trustees, and the National Business Agents. B. Meetings of the Executive Council shall be held at least twice each year. They shall be held at such times and in such places as the President shall determine. The President shall act as chairperson of the Executive Council when in session, and the Assistant Secretary Treasurer shall act as its secretary. C. Meetings of the Executive Council shall be on not less than 10 days' notice, except for emergency meetings. D. A meeting of the Executive Council may be called by petition of a majority of the members of the Council. E. Second only to the Convention in legislative and policy-making authority, it shall act in between conventions on all matters related to the welfare of the union, not specifically prohibited by the membership, and it shall submit such proposed changes to the Constitution and laws of the National Association of Letter Carriers and subordinate bodies thereof to the national conventions as it may deem expedient. The Executive Council is hereby authorized to, hold on, before we get into what it's authorized to do, I want to point out what we just read here. That the authority of the Executive Council is second only to the Convention in legislative and policy-making authority. So that puts the President third in that regard. The Convention body itself is first, the Executive Council is second, and then presumably the President is third. All right, so here's what they're authorized to do. One, supervise the activities, affairs, and functioning of the union. 2. Establish and order compliance with such rules, regulations, or procedures consistent with its constitution as are required for the effective management of the affairs of the union. 3. Authorize and or ratify the payment of salaries, wages, expenses, allowances, and other disbursements which it deems necessary and appropriate to the purpose and functioning of this union, other than provided for. 4. establish such benefits as may be required to attract and retain competent personnel, including but not limited to annuity, welfare, vacations, holidays, severance pay, tuition or scholarship, and insurance benefits. 5. Lease, buy, sell, mortgage, or dispose of, on behalf of the union, any property rights or privileges it deems desirable to meet the objectives and purposes of the membership. 6. Direct the investment of the funds of this union in readily convertible securities that have a stated or well-known money market value. It shall not at any time loan money on personal security or real estate mortgages, and it shall deposit with the Secretary-Treasurer for safekeeping all deeds and securities belonging to this union. 7. Decide questions of jurisdiction relating to subordinate bodies and conclude organizational and jurisdictional agreements with other labor organizations. 8. Provide financial assistance from the general assets of the union to any subordinate body. So this is probably where the remainder of the funds for the convention come from. 9. Bring suit in behalf of the union with full authority to bind in such suit all members of the union and to assume the costs of any legal... Oops. Hold on. Getting back to where I was, and to assume the costs of any legal actions in which the union becomes involved. Sorry, on my tablet, I just got a notification, and I went to clear it out, and instead of swiping it, I tapped it, and then it brought up the notification, and I lost my screen. But thanks to the magic of the pause button, I was able to get it back, and we continue. 10. Levy assessments for necessary revenue in accordance with this constitution. 11. Establish such marks, labels, or other insignia to identify the union or to improve the recognition and status of the membership. 12. Appoint a person to fill a vacancy in office where procedures are not otherwise provided in this constitution or the bylaws of any subordinate body to serve until the next regular election for that office. 13. Refer questions or matters to a subcommittee of the Executive Council, which will decide or determine the disposition of such questions or matters, subject to action at the next meeting of the Executive Council or convention. 14. Conduct a poll of members on such subjects and under such rules as it may decide. 15. Give a general report from time to time through the president in the postal record and biennially to the convention. 16. Supervise the arrangements for and the conduct of all national conventions. 17. In conjunction with the president, the Executive Council shall have the power to investigate any branch or member of a branch who interferes in the work of the organization or who circulates false or misleading statements calculated to retard the officers in conducting the organization work. If a branch or member of a branch is found guilty, after a fair hearing, the Executive Council and President shall have the power to suspend such branch or member subject to appeal to the National Convention in accordance with the procedure set out in Article 10 of this Constitution. These powers shall be in addition to those of the President defined in Article 18 entitled Trusteeship. 18. Approve payment for the general fund by the Secretary-Treasurer, the amount required to continue for life the supplemental annuity equal to 75% of salary at retirement of former national presidents on the NALC retirement roll at the time of the 1977 installation of officers. I wonder if that only applies to people who were officers in 1977, or if it's that way for all presidents going forward. Former national presidents on the NALC retirement roll at the time of the 1977 installation. No, so it's only, it appears by my reading, it's for anybody who was president before 1977. Regional administrative assistance, and this is the last one. Section 12A. Regional administrative assistants shall be entitled to reimbursement of all itemized expenses legitimately incurred in the conduct of affairs of the union. Their salaries, payable weekly, shall be set by the national president, subject to the approval of the executive council. Everybody gets paid weekly except letter carriers. B. Regional administrative assistants shall cover the NALC regional office when the national business agent is away on official assignment or on leave for an extended period of time. And thus ends Article 9, and thus ends this episode. Look at that, coming in under an hour. So guys, we're learning a lot about how the union is supposed to behave, what people are supposed to do, how much we pay ourselves. Oh my goodness. You know, one of the planks of the Bill to Fighting NALC is to have a worker's wage for union officers. And that seems reasonable to me. These salaries seem awfully high. And if there's that much work to do, then let's divide that work between multiple people. Because, you know, some of these things, getting extra vacation time, getting paid weekly instead of by a semi or every 2 weeks, that stuff just rubbed me the wrong way. And it helps to create this class divide between union leaders and rank and file carriers. And that's not the way we're supposed to be as a union. So that's my two cents. Regardless, that is all for today. Thank you guys for listening. Look at that, under an hour. Catch you guys next time.